Welcome to the Foresight Health Roundup podcast, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. It is Thursday, November 14th. There are a couple of things we like to say here at Foresight Health. Well, Dave Johnson likes to say them, and we wholeheartedly agree with him. First, healthcare will change more in the next 10 years than it has in the past 100 years. And second, the pressure to change will come from outside in rather than from inside out. We're going to talk about a few recent signs of that on today's show with Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you two doing this morning? Dave?
Well, thanks for the plug, Dave. Paul Kusserow's in my new book, The Coming Healthcare Revolution, launched this week. Read all about how healthcare will change so dramatically in the next 10 years and why outside forces will be the primary drivers of industry transformation. On the press now. Get the story.
Yeah. Congratulations. A long gestation, but a healthy baby, right?
Let's hope.
Well done. Yeah. Julie, how are you?
Well, I'm settling into our new reality. I've been binging podcasts like you, I shouldn't say read about, you listen about. And I'm running out of podcasts to help me process. So if any of our listeners have podcasts they want me to listen to, of course, you know, you listen to ours. Send them my way.
Great. New habits developing. Very, very good. Now, before we talk about signs that the healthcare market is changing, I wanted to ask you about what signs you've seen in your interactions with the industry. Dave, any signs, big or little, in your healthcare world that tell us we're headed in the right direction?
You know, Dave, do you remember that 1970 song, Signs, by the five-man electric band? That song has a refrain that's been an earworm inside my head for decades. You know, sign, sign, everywhere a sign, blocking up, breaking my mind, do this, don't do that. Can't you see, read the signs? So you ask for a good sign, I'll give you one. Last month, my one medical PCP wanted me to get a MRI calcium test for my heart, and he referred me to the imaging center at Advocate Illinois Masonic, which is a couple blocks from my house. So I call them up and they can't see me until January, and God knows what it would have cost. So I wrote him back and said, hey, any other ideas? And he sent me to a standalone MRI company down the street, less than a mile from my house. So I called them up. They got me in the next day, $50 cash, no insurance forms, really easy in and out. And it turned out I had a big fat score of zero, which was also good news.
Excellent.
Yeah. So that's clearly a good sign in and of itself. But like a week later, I had lunch with Shoaib Siddifawala, the physician who's the chief strategy officer for Advocate. And I was telling him the story. And he was actually delighted by that.
Really?
Yeah. Inside Advocate, he is pushing as aggressively as possible for decentralizing healthcare delivery. He said, we can't compete with that. So the fact that my tests got into the Advocate record and I'm a happy customer, he thought was delightful. So a good sign all the way around.
No, great to hear. Julie, any change in your healthcare world that signals a shift in where we're going?
Well, you know, given my age, I'm in more menopause discussions these days than I care to think about. And, you know, this topic used to be taboo. Doctors told women to just suck it up and, you know, they dealt with it. And today we have award-winning documentaries that are earning physician CME credits. We have companies like MIDI and Electra that have created models that are designed for women who are 40 and older, like focusing the care model, the science, the lifestyle, the supplements, the behavioral health, everything that a woman needs in this stage. And women are constantly asking other women, like, what do you do? So the fact that I can say, oh my gosh, go to MIDI, go to Electra, try this, like, it's incredible. So it's pretty empowering, honestly.
No, that's great. I just read a health benefits survey report, and it mentioned for the first time menopause-related health benefits as part of health plans that they offer. So I think that's spot on. That's great. For me, it was just this past Tuesday. My wife had a brief telemedicine visit with her primary care physician to double-check a prescription med. And that's a major shift in convenience in our household. And the big news is it happened without any technical glitches, which if you've ever seen us try to turn on the TV and, you know, call out a streaming service, it's a miracle. So
congratulations.
Thank you very much. One more reason never to leave the house, right? Okay, let's talk about three things that happened in the market last month that we haven't mentioned on the show, and you tell me what they mean for the industry. On October 9th, Amazon said it was opening pharmacies in 20 new cities next year, giving customers their same-day delivery of their prescription medications. About 2 weeks later, on October 22nd, Walmart announced that it would start offering same-day delivery of prescription drugs in 49 states by the end of next year. That's up from 6 states this year. Sandwiched in between, the Cleveland Clinic announced that it was opening up a new primary care clinic in collaboration with Amazon One Medical. Taken by themselves, these announcements may not mean much, but taken together, they may say a lot. Dave, when you put these things together, what do they say about healthcare competition, market forces changing healthcare, and what healthcare will look like in 10 years?
Market versus medicine.
Right, right.
Which was the title of my first book. I've got a kind of a cute story about market versus medicine that relates to this. So a woman that used to work with me, Julia Quasi, has a prodigy for a son. Now, every parent believes their child is special, but her son, Kyron, in the third grade, got evaluated, and they said he was ready for college.
Oh, and my goodness.
His IQ is off the chart. And last year, he graduated from Santa Clara University in Silicon Valley with a degree in engineering at age 14, and he's now working for SpaceX. So truly a brilliant kid. Anyway, when he was six, Market versus Medicine had just come out, and I was going to see Julia. And she said, I have this really cute story to tell you. I said, well, tell me. And so as she was going out the door, Kyron came up to her and said, you know, you're going to see Dave. And she said, yeah, I am. She said, well, ask him who won. She said, what are you talking about? And he wrote a book, Market versus Medicine, who won? So,
that's great.
We've been sort of inside Foresight Health using that market versus medicine. Do true market economics win, or do artificial medicine economics win, kind of ever since? And you go down the list here, Walmart, Amazon One Medical, and the Cleveland Clinic. Those are all market wins, right? Good for the consumers, good for value, good outcomes. Let's talk first about Walmart and, to some extent, the Amazon announcement. You know, competition works both ways. I think a lot of people are wondering what impact this is going to have on health systems and their pharmacies and so on. But the Walmarts and Amazons of the world are also trying to compete with GoodRx and Honeybee and, you know, the Avon Pure Optum. So this is, I think, in part a response to that competitive threat coming their way as much as it is to kind of steal market share from those that aren't as efficient. So that's pretty interesting. But far more interesting for me is putting the Amazon pharmacy announcement together with its Amazon One Medical Cleveland Clinic announcement. And let me tell you why. A couple of weeks ago, I had a long conversation with Sri Chagaturu, who is the chief medical officer for CVS Health, used to be at Mass General. Anyway, listen to his job description. Sri leads the CVS Health Medical Affairs Organization spanning Aetna, CVS Caremark, CVS Pharmacy, Minute Clinic, Women's Health and Genomics, Data and Analytics, Patient Safety and Health Equity. How's that for a day job? And so Sri and I are talking, and he told me he absolutely hates the term retail medicine, just hates it. You said when you look at CVS, they're actually far more B2B than they are B2C. And at the end of the day, it's all just medicine. And how do you put it together in ways that deliver the most effective care at the lowest price with best customer service? He's exactly the kind of physician leader that you want at somebody like CVS Health. And I'm not trying to plug the book too much today yet, but Paul and I have two acronyms in there that we talk about quite a bit. The first is 3DWPH, and we think that's the disruptive innovation that's going to bring down the current model. And it stands for democratized and decentralized distribution. That's the 3D of whole person health. And then the second is the CB2E2. And I know we've talked about this a few times, but is it cheaper? Is it better? Is it more balanced between health and healthcare provision? Is it easier? And is it empowering to caregivers and consumers? So CB2E2. And I think really the answer to your question, Dave, is on these fronts, do these three initiatives and others like them meet the 3DWPH test? And the answer to that is yes. And do they meet the CB2E2 test? The answer there is yes, too. So expect more of them.
That's a good sign. Thanks, Dave. Julie, any questions for Dave?
Well, Dave, I have a question that maybe is a step removed from the broader model orientation you were just talking about. When you look at what's happening on the pharmacy side and what Walmart and Amazon, even CVS Aetna could do, how long do you give it until hospitals throw in the towel on pharmacy? Like, will it just be redefining certain drug classes, all this movement, or can Amazon and Walmart really take over all of pharmacy?
What we're all getting at here with all these, you know, companies that we're listing is that for the most part, drugs are commodity products. They should have transparent pricing. So there'd be a clearing price and a little bit of a margin over that. And the winners, and maybe it will be Walmart and global domination, although they proved they couldn't do primary care, at least standalone primary care. And the metrics for that are, you know, price, scale, efficiency, customer experience. It does seem that this part of the healthcare industry, you know, drug distribution, is one of those that should be subject to the rules of commodity markets, market wins. So back to your big question, you know, should health systems give it up? I think the smart ones will, and the even smarter ones will partner with more effective service providers. So I expect we're going to see more of this, and it's good for the industry, it's good for consumers, but it's not going to be good for those that are clinging on to kind of an archaic way of doing things.
All right. So I leave my doctor's office. She calls in a prescription to Amazon, and the drug is waiting on my front porch when I get home from the office visit, right? Thanks, Dave. Julie, it's your turn. When you saw these announcements, what was your first reaction? What do they say collectively about healthcare market competition? And what lessons do they have for other healthcare innovators?
Well, you know, I ended up in a conversation this week with the head of healthcare from Instacart, and she's impressive, by the way. And that's a business that could really revolutionize food deserts and healthy eating. I mean, we talk a lot about big tech and healthcare, but their market cap is around $11 billion, and they have partnerships with everyone. It's a huge white labeling business. I really had no idea. It's quite something. So why am I talking about Instacart? We talked a lot about same-day pharmacy delivery, and she was pretty pessimistic about the business. And it caught my attention, and I started thinking about it. And certainly, Berta, when you want to talk about it this week, we didn't go deep, but I suspect it's actually a really intimidating business because pharmacy is so much more complicated than just the supply chain logistics of food, really. The insurance coverage, the generic substitution, the patient copays, the patient education, I mean, like on and on and on. And simply put, it's not just delivering groceries to households, right? So those who, like a Walmart and an Amazon, can play here have a huge market. I mean, the pharmacy deserts are growing. That's why I think, you know, these two think they can actually blow Walgreens and CVS out of the water, given what's happening with their businesses, at least their pharmacy footprints. And the stats here are pretty crazy. A recent study found that nearly half of U.S. counties have communities over 10 miles from the nearest pharmacy. It's a long way, depending upon who you are. traditional mail order prescriptions, as we've talked about, can take up to 10 days to arrive. So that's not good for adherence. And, you know, we all know this, but as of 2019, 7 in 10 hospitals relied on fax machines and phone lines to order prescriptions. So, you know, when you look at where we are in society, these digital first pharmacies like Amazon, I mean, they offer something of real value. So when I look at this, you know, I also happen to have spoken to a senior pharmacy exec from Walmart in the last few months. And I wasn't surprised to see them announce within days after Amazon, because their goal is to become the biggest omnichannel retailer in the world, which of course competes with Amazon. And, you know, for them, that means stores, e-commerce, and the last mile. And they want to, I think today they can actually enable delivery in 1 to 3 hours for certain subsets in certain regions. But with this announcement, obviously they want to do that at scale. And, you know, it's just really about, for these businesses now, integrating pharmacy with the rest of the quote unquote store, whether you're Amazon or Walmart, they're both doing that. So this is the vision of the future. And what's interesting for me is we've seen companies for years like Alto, NimbleRx, FillerX, a number of these types of companies that have really been enabling local pharmacies to get into the delivery game. And that hasn't really been same day. That's been more like, you know, 1 to 7 day delivery kind of thing. But it makes me wonder what's going to happen to these companies and local pharmacies, because these big behemoths will just have scale and price that blows them out of the water.
You know, the best part of this podcast is you guys are talking to people on the front lines, right? So we've just heard different perspectives from people at these organizations that are making these changes. So that's fantastic. Thanks, Julie. Dave, any questions for Julie?
Julie, you've got one of the keenest eyes I know for visionary leaders and innovative companies. We're about to change administrations. You may have heard about that. If you were to become the new CMS or CMMI administrator, and by the way, wouldn't that be fantastic, everybody? What policy changes would you undertake to amplify innovation broadly within the healthcare industry to do the things that you talk about all the time?
So first off, when I look back on, you know, government-driven innovation, if that's even a thing, I think someone like Anish Chopra does not get enough credit for all he led to kick off innovation by liberating data from government databases, which really catapulted innovative solutions and, Dave, our favorite thing, transparency. So thank you, Anish, first of all. I mean, you really did amazing work back in the day. And today I look at what ARPA-H is doing, and it's a little laboratory that's really trying to bring together, you know, some of the best minds and looking at public-private partnerships to either launch businesses or launch, you know, research efforts. Like the focus that ARPA-H has is pretty impressive. But honestly, Dave, you know, the health policies that I think are friendly for innovation are a lot of things that we've seen over the last decade that we talk about here a lot. I mean, on the drug side, of course, streamlining regulatory pathways and creating more contemporary ways of approaching drug development is a good thing. But on our side of the kind of digital wall, all the value-based payment and, you know, public-private partnerships, the data sharing efforts, looking at innovation hubs and accelerators that bring a lot of this to life, I mean, including, you know, value-based payment, patient-centered design, all these things, those are all positive. And unfortunately, a lot of those are agency-driven, so I worry about that. I hope that we actually see some reinforcement of telehealth expansion, because the more we can be driving alternate sites of care, alternate approaches to care through technology, the more innovation you'll see with data and bringing that to bear in the care delivery model. So, you know, everything around telehealth and personalized medicine are critical.
Yeah, it's like you like to say with regulations, right? Not too cold, not too hot. They have to be just right. So let's hope that happens. For me, not standing in line at the pharmacy counter behind senior citizens arguing about their $2 copays will be a dream come true. And, you know, that's worse than being at the deli counter when an oldster complains that the ham wasn't sliced thin enough. You know? You've been there. And Dave, I know it's not you, because you don't eat meat, and that's why your arteries are so clean. So good for you. Now let's talk about other big healthcare news that happened this past week. Wasn't all bad, was it? Julie, what else happened that we should know about?
Well, our poor friends at Amedisys are back in a lawsuit with the DOJ. DOJ is trying to block United's acquisition of Amedisys. So sorry, Paul. It's a rough road.
Yeah, I think whoever's deal was next was going to get hit, right?
Yeah.
Whether it was that one or another one. So we'll keep an eye on that. Dave, what other news is worth mentioning?
Well, you know, speaking of Paul, I did mention at the top of the show that his and my new book is out this week, and it's always a glorious and humbling moment for authors when our babies come into the world. So many people to thank, including very much the two of you. But given the book's focus on revolutionary healthcare transformation, I do have one question for our audience. Is it really that audacious to believe that we can transform the broken U.S. healthcare system for the better?
I'm a believer. Good for you, Dave.
I don't know.
Okay, wait and see attitude. All right.
I'm a believer. I couldn't leave her if
there
I
there you go. We'll end on that high note from the monkeys. So thanks, Dave. Thanks, Julie. That is all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed on today's show, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You also can subscribe to the Roundup on Spotify, Apple Podcast, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Don't miss another segment of the best 20 minutes in healthcare. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.